Conscious Living, Empower Radio. It's that time already. This is such a fast, the year is going by so fast. We're already in February. Valentine's is around the corner, which means lots of chocolates. Oh, why limit yourself to one day a year? Okay, just do the chocolates and say, yeah, it's Valentine's. Well, I do. My guest, I've actually talked with Bob before, and I wanted to talk with him again because there's just so much content with this that it's hard to narrow the focus. And at the same time, there are also lots of, he's done book reviews of other people who are proficient and, you know, if there's an expert level at out-of-body experiences. And so I wanted to also bring that into the equation too. So here we go. We're going to get into this. And if you are following along, you can check out Bob's book, Out-of-Body Experiences, either the actual hard copy version, getting a book online. He also has that available free. And then you can check out the blog. So robertpeterson.org or the OBE Outlook on Life blogspot. All right. So now we're good to go. Okay. Now we're all up speed. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Wendy. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I just happened to check the blog and found another book. It just opened up to Out-of-Body Experiences, 40 Years of Practical Shared for the First Time Experiences, Akina. And so I'm like, how many books have you reviewed on the blog?
It's in the high 80s, 85 or something. I mean, I can get you the exact number if you're really interested.
No. We don't just ballpark it. That's enough. Okay. That there are that many books, which I think is fantastic. And the fact that you've done this yourself, and I think the last time we got into since 1979 or so, that was the first time you, the legit experience.
Yeah. Yep. And that kind of set me off on a quest to learn as much as I could about the out-of-body experience. And so I started collecting books and reading them, of course. And of course, back in 1979, there weren't that many. There was maybe, I don't know, a dozen or something books. And now I've got a collection of more than 200. It seems like there are 3-4 coming out every year. And a lot of good information out there. A lot of more people are having the experience and writing about what they've experienced.
Well, I think you and I have followed the same people, too. And there are some really, really, I think, good details in everybody's book. It's the thing about this is there's no perfect way. There's no one size fits all. It's how you experience it, and whatever works for you is going to be the best way to approach it. When you did this 1979, see, I'm remembering that was when the first stuff that Robert Monroe was getting into was starting to come out, and he was actually getting people to go to a certain place and induce an out-of-body state, that kind of thing. And so from that point, to me, that was one of the very few resources available for this topic. And it has just absolutely exploded, in my opinion, here in the last 10 years with all of these books now being available and people saying, yeah, I've been doing this for decades and this is how it works. Are you amazed at the numbers of books and that information available now?
Yeah, it is really amazing how it's grown, because like I said, when I started, there was only a few books on it. And Monroe's book came out in the early 70s, I think 1971 or something like that. And so most of the literature before that was all based on occultism and things like that. And a lot of misinformation was out there. And I think a lot of people saw Monroe's book and said, well, hey, you know, let's try this. And a lot of people, and I was one of them, got verifiable results from using some of the techniques he suggested. And that kind of set a lot of people off on a course of trying to explore this state. Monroe created the Monroe Institute in Virginia, and they do workshops there with different things that they've developed over the many years. Monroe has long since died, of course, the information that he put out there in his book is still influencing people even today. And yeah, it's amazing how it's grown. There gets to be a point where, I mean, I was reading all these books and trying to figure out what worked and didn't work. And what worked for one person doesn't work for another person. And it's strange because some things work and other things work. And, So anyway, yeah, I started going through, and it's like, well, I should be taking notes. I never took any notes on these things. So then, I don't know, about 5 years ago or something like that, maybe longer, I decided to go back and start rereading all of my original books, the OBE books, and the new ones, of course, that come out. And this time I decided to start doing book reviews and trying to say, you know, write down notes about, okay, well, this is where this one matches others, and this matches my experience, and this one doesn't. And, you know, just trying to compile all that information and make it useful for people. And that's why I put it on my blog.
Well, and I've interviewed various people who, during the Monroe, it kind of revamped after a while. I've interviewed three directors, and Nancy McMonagall is the latest, but who is Monroe's stepdaughter. But my grandmother went there in the late 80s and did the program and was so excited. And I don't remember the details. I just remember her sitting on the bed talking about it. And I wish I had been able to pay more attention at that time. I was too young to really grasp what all she was doing. But I knew that one of the things she really felt that she wished she had a better grasp on was how to do an intentional out-of-body experience. And I've had my own where I also had a guide assist, and I was given basically kind of a warning. I didn't know what was going to happen, but at that point I got an energetic boost. And to me, the way I describe it is I got kicked out of my body. It was like, whoa, it was, you know, instantaneous. So that was another experience, a way of doing this that I don't know that very many people address, but that, for me, I didn't even know how to prepare for it. It was just something that was given to me. And having had this experience with my grandmother, who went and worked with Robert Monroe and that group in Virginia, there was a kind of a fascination with this topic anyway. And having experienced it as a kid, I was like, okay, this is something I'm really thrilled to see more people exploring and investigating, because it gives you a better sense of your own consciousness, your own connection, that you are not just stuck in a physical form. And you're on the blog, you went through and described the techniques, because you said one of the things that often that you would get a complaint about was, I've tried for years to have this experience and I can't do it. And for you, what is the most common issue of the sense that you're going to be in that next out-of-body phase? Is it a vibration? Is it a sensation? What do most people, by and large, have to know that this is happening?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious when it's happening, because, you know, things just seem really different. That's usually not an issue. The thing is, I see a lot of people who want to have an out-of-body experience and they don't know how to try. And then, you know, they look for suggestions on the internet. They try a few things. And, I mean, they have, there's common problems. I just wrote an article, my most recent article on my blog talks about the common problems and mistakes that people make when they're beginning. Like, they sometimes let themselves get too close to sleep and then they fall asleep. That's a common problem. Another problem is that they don't let themselves get close enough to sleep. And so what happens is that, you know, they stay vigilant and they never let go. I mean, you have to a certain extent, you have to let go of that bodily awareness. And, but when it actually happens, I mean, most people, the sensations that they feel, and that varies a great deal, because some people experience vibrations and other people don't. Vibrations are very common, and sometimes people describe them as being very mild and even soothing. And for me, it was, you know, very rough and electrical, and I mean, I thought I was being electrocuted. So, I mean, there's really no mistaking. And that was when I was beginning, you know, way back in 1979. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, when I pop out of my body, it's much more quick, and I don't even notice the vibrations anymore. And I have theories about that, and just kind of a clicking, you know, it just kind of clicks and I'm there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, there's the thing. There's no universal language either. I, in reading your reviews, when people talk about projecting or traveling or the astral state, and they could be saying the very same thing. It's just the language is difficult to know without, you know, saying, okay, can you describe this the way you're outlining the experience? Do you mean projection as I am desiring something, or I am pushing myself there, or I am having an expectation? There's a lot of different, in terms of, you know, the terminology, interpretations for just that one word, projection.
Yeah, I know there is a lot of terminology problems, and it's because we don't have a common base of experience from which to work. I tried to address it a little bit in my second book, Lessons Out of the Body. I've got a section on there of just the terminology and how I define things. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there, and it's because a lot of authors don't quite know, you know, the context in which, you know, to describe an experience they're having. Good point, you know, in regard to that is Robert Monroe himself. In his first book, he described classical out-of-body experiences where he's, you know, has a perception of a non-physical body that somehow can float around and, you know, act kind of ghostly, if you will. But in Robert Monroe's second and third books, he talks not about out-of-body experiences, but he starts going off on these, what he calls focus levels. And I've read a lot of books about the focus levels from a lot of different Monroe Institute graduates, if you will, like Bruce Cohen, for example. And they describe focus levels as something slightly different. Now, in my first book, I address the subject right away of astral projection versus out-of-body experience. And for me, I don't like making that distinction because astral projection is kind of a term they used to use in the old occultism circles. And if you ask some people, they're adamant that, okay, an astral projection is completely different from an out-of-body. And the difference is in an astral projection, you're off on the astral plane and you're experiencing, you know, astral realities and you're seeing astral cities and all of this. My experience has been out-of-body experience. I mean, you find yourself in the middle of a strange city or something like that, but there aren't any signs overhead that says you're now in the astral plane. I mean, it's just, you know, how do you know that it's the astral plane? You know, how do you perceive these planes? So I think a lot of it is terminology, and not to say that their experiences aren't somewhat different, but for me, they're all just out-of-body experiences. If you want to group astral projection as a subset of out-of-body, then okay, you can say that, but I don't feel the need to make that distinction. In an out-of-body experience, to me, you can either be, you know, for most people, it happens exactly once in their lifetime and they don't know how to recreate it, and it happens spontaneously or by accident. And they find themselves usually in their bedroom and they look back and they can see their own body or something like that. A lot of people I've talked to have had out-of-body experiences all their lives and have never been brave enough to leave their bedroom.
because they don't know what's happening.
They kind of freak out. It's like, I don't know what's going on here. I don't want to do this and I'm scared and all of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they finally, well, what do I do? And I say, just, you know, walk through your bedroom door or something and go out there and explore, you know. But you're not going to find a thing that says, welcome to the astral plane, because it's just not there.
I remember one of the times I've done this, I went through the wall and up and got stuck in the phone wires. I'm like, dang it, nobody talked about this. what do I do? And I remember just trying to figure out how to get out of the telephone wires right above the house, thinking, okay, I'm not supposed to be stuck here. And then it dissolved. But it was that thing of, as soon as I had that emotion and that the energy of getting frustrated, then it broke. I was back in my body. And I went, dang it. That was funny. things that you don't expect.
Yeah. Well, and that's another key thing there, to distinguish between an OBE and a lucid dream. I mean, some people say, oh, you know, out of body is just a lucid dream. I believe it's not. And there have been psychologists and psychiatrists who've studied this, and they say it's not. What they are, they're not willing to speculate. But in a lucid dream, your expectations go a long way. So if you get if you expect to be caught in those wires, you will be in a lucid dream. Typical example is a lot of lucid dreaming books, like Robert Wagoner's book, or books. I've read a couple of his now. They're great books. I highly recommend them. But you can do things like you can walk up to a door and in a lucid dream, and you can say, you can expect, well, I expect when I open this door that there's going to be a beautiful woman on the other side. So you open the door, and there's a beautiful woman there. In an out-of-body, it's not that straightforward. Your expectations aren't usually met or aren't often met. So you encounter the unexpected a lot more in an OBE.
Well, and that's sometimes when I've had a lucid dream, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm awake. I need to see what this reality is like. And it will be a completely different sense of, it does not look literal. And so the out of body for me, I can see what's in the room. I don't have to use my eyes. The other night when I was doing it, I was looking and I was trying to open my eyes and see what was on the door. And I realized the entire time my eyes had been shut and I'm looking at the room through my eyes. And so I was out of body at that moment, but I was too preoccupied with trying to figure out if it was a person standing at the door and it was something that was hung over the door. It was a jacket, but it was the exact same vision of what I had with my eyes open. It's just I hadn't woken up. So that part of it was being that in-between state and not really intending to do it, just kind of all of a sudden drifting into that OBE phase. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's very common. And that's another difference between lucid dream and OBE is the eyesight thing and your body image. In a lucid dream, you typically have your body image matches your physical body. So you look at your hands, they look normal and all of that.
Yes.
In an OBE, a lot of times they don't. And your eyesight in a lucid dream tends to be, you can even magnify things and you can see, the tiniest detail of grains. I mean, people walk up to their, walls and they describe, every tiny pore in the sheetrock and things like that, And in an OBE, things are not always that detailed and crisp. A lot of times they're more murky. A lot of times you see strange lights and strange energy hanging around the room. And a lot of times, like you described, you can see through your closed eyes or see in 360 degrees. And that's kind of something that I described in my first book as astral mind sensing. And it's just kind of a word I came up with. It's like, you can walk, through a room completely, with your eyes closed using this way, and you can navigate the room without bumping into anything, and you can, tell where everything is, but you're not actually seeing it. And it's just kind of really hard to describe, but it's like a 360-degree eyesight.
Well, that's the thing about this. In your first book, you lay out, you do give some, just like the blog, you give examples. You're trying to make this accessible to anybody who is curious and wanting to try. And I love that because there's so much about this that improves as we get a better grip on what our consciousness is capable of and the difference between a lucid dream and out-of-body state or that astral plane that people talk about too. And it's like, what is the difference and how do I... No, and you really, we're at a loss when we take somebody else's terms. You explain that when I think you said you were on a certain level and you asked for the inspec in the first book, and the guy or whoever it was you talked to said, excuse me?
Yeah, right.
Excuse, right, that's a Robert Monroe term, excuse me?
Yeah, they don't know, yeah.
And so you take somebody else's term and they're like, okay.
Yeah, and... yeah, and that was more Monroe's way of trying to relate an unrelatable experience in his focus level experiences. It's you kind of want things to happen a certain way in an OBE, and they don't always work out that way. It's really different. I'm trying to make it accessible as I can to the common person because the more people start having these OBEs, the more we can gain scientific understanding about it, how it relates to, us, how it relates, because I believe we're more than physical beings. And I think that's not, you know, just I think there's a lot of data to back that up. For example, the books by Dean Radin, for example, I love those books, where he does statistical analysis on minds influencing other minds. And he's not talking about OBEs at all. He's just talking about, you know, analyzing the data from, you know, 100 years of telepathy experiments with the, you know, parapsychologists and trying to do meta-analysis on all this. And it's like, okay, the odds are overwhelming. And how is this, you know, data, if you can read somebody's mind from 200 miles away, how is that data being transmitted? And, you know, he starts talking, you know, about things like quantum fields and getting into the actual science. And that's what I want to see. I want to see people exploring the state, relating their experiences, and not only because it'll bring us closer to where we need to be scientifically, but also spiritually, because, I mean, the sooner we can agree on, okay, this is what lies on the other side of death. If there's something that transcends the physical body, and, you know, if we can all agree of, okay, this is what happens when you're on the other side, these are the places that exist out there, I mean, pretty soon you're starting to transfer, you know, you're starting to transform your experience, you know, to experience rather than belief. So,
that's a huge difference.
Yeah, there's this old adage of, you know, that spirituality is believing in your own experiences. Religion is believing in someone else's experiences. I want to see more firsthand experiencers because I think all of our religions are based on someone at some point's firsthand experience. And I think the more information we can have out there, the better off we are. And the less, you know, quarreling and fighting about religion and all of this stuff, you know, I mean, it'll change the world.
Well, and that's part of, I think, what is so helpful with the books that you review. There was one that I read recently. I think I really appreciate the fact that when you do a review, you also put some links in here so you can follow it up. That's the benefit. I love having the book. I love having, because I don't have to worry about electricity. I don't have to worry about anything like that. I can just go take it wherever I am. And if the power goes out, I'm still good, you know, all that good stuff. And this, with the actual electronic version and being on the web, then I've got access to hundreds of links of other people's information to validate whatever it is you're saying so I can explore further. So there's benefits to either way of accessing the information, but I do appreciate you've done so much work putting your blog together that there is an overwhelming amount of information for anybody who's interested in this. And I think, thank you so much. I just want you to know that is so much appreciated that you have, you know, you've gone to the trouble of including all of these other bits and pieces of information, because that's how we learn. And that's how we, I believe, evolve.
Well, thank you, Wendy. I'm glad that somebody is seeing some value in what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm putting it out there. You know, I put my first book out on my website for free since before it was published in hard, you know, in as paper, and to prove that I'm not in it for the money. I really want to see this field expand and take off, because, you know, on the one hand, you've got scientists who say this is impossible, it can't be happening, or it's a anomaly of the brain or something like that. And on the other hand, you've got experiencers who say, no, seeing is believing. And what I want to do is bridge that gap and bring the two together. And I want to just expand that knowledge. And I'm hoping that I can contribute to that whole effort.
Well, okay, two of the books, just for any, if you're following along, Out of Body Experiences, How to Have Them and What to Expect. That's really helpful because you get through the part where you start having other experiences that might be considered paranormal or psychic, telepathic. Those things start to increase. The other book is Lessons Out of the Body, and that's a journal of spiritual growth, and Out-of-Body Travel. Those two books are specifically geared toward helping anybody expand their out-of-body practice. We're going to have to take a break, but I just wanted to spell out the two books, and then that's robertpeterson.org if you're following along on the internet. In the meantime, though, I want to come back and ask what it was like, because there are some people who talk about that silver cord, And you at one point had a little struggle with the silver cord. Starting to see. Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's just, when we come back, talk about some of the experiences that you've had and the possible psychic experience that, this brings up as a part of your, you know, normal abilities that might be enhanced when we try these kinds of exercises, learning how to be more than just the physical body in this incarnation. All right. My guest is Robert Peterson, and we're talking out-of-body experiences on Conscious Living.
There's a natural resource that exists everywhere on the planet which could benefit all of civilization. Yet it's been largely ignored. That resource is women. In many of the world's poorest communities, women are denied a significant role. So often their talent and potential remain untapped. At CARE, we found in country after country that empowering women is one of the fastest ways to improve conditions and help end poverty. That's why CARE is helping provide girls and women with an education, opportunity, and a voice worldwide.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
It's a source of power the world can no longer afford to overlook. She has the power to change her world. You have the power to help her do it. Call 1-800-521-CARE or visit care.org.
Hi, I'm Kelly Clarkson, and I've toured the country dozens of times, and there's one thing every state has in common: childhood hunger. The sad truth is that 17 million kids don't know where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Yet there are billions of pounds of surplus food around the country at farms and warehouses that could help end this injustice. But all that food is useless if it doesn't get where it needs to go. That's why the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids before it goes to waste. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank. Find out how at feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together we're Feeding America.
To help solve hunger in your community and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that four-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Conscious Living, Empower Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. If you ever want more information about the show, what I do and that kind of stuff, you can check out. I've got a couple of blog sites. One is Talking to Nightlights and the other one is the Wendy's Coffee House site. So those, I put all sorts of information on there, links and that kind of stuff, just because I love exploring. I love investigating. I'm curious about the world. I'm curious about the things that we can do. And one of the experiences I had that was out of body, and this is back in 87, when I had time to myself and I was doing a meditation, just normal meditation session. I was laying on the bed, super relaxed, and I experienced being above my body. I was a ball of light, yellow, like about the size of a basketball. I could see, even though I was a ball of light, my body underneath me on the bed. So I was just right, maybe, you know, about a foot and just hovering there and thinking, oh, this is so fantastic. And then at that split second, I realized I was also looking at myself from the corner of the room and seeing that and knowing this must be that Yun, the Trinity, because here I am. I'm in three states of awareness. I can see myself. I have no idea what my body looked like or what state I was in from that third aspect. I thought might possibly be the oversoul. But that was, for me, a pivotal moment, because I'm like, if I am this fantastically separate and aware from these different vantage points, there's a whole lot more going on here, and I want to know. So for me, that was the big breakthrough of knowing that there's so much more going on here, and how do we access these states? Now, Bob, I mentioned that silver cord thing before we got to the break, and that's just one of the kind of the textbook things that people talk about, of being connected when they're out of body. They say that there's a silver cord, and I've seen it at one point. I remember being way out off planet and looking at that cord behind me down to planet Earth, thinking, why do I need this? And oh yeah, that's exactly what people talk about. And here I am, and I really don't care. So you had a tug of war with yours, and I thought that was great. I was like, no. How'd that come out?
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing about the silver cord is, you know, it's been, you know, people have been seeing it since, you know, millennia. There's mention of it in the Bible, in Ecclesiastes. You know, there's a quote in there, if ever the, you know, silver cord be loosed, and that refers to dying when your silver cord is severed. And so there's a whole belief system out there that we have a cord that connects us from our astral body, if you will, to our physical body, and that the astral body kind of, different people claim different things, but some say that the astral body, you know, keeps in touch with the physical, or the physical keeps in touch with the astral, or whatever. And if you break the cord, that you're going to, you know, die, basically. Your physical body won't be able to continue without you. And the strange thing is, some people see the silver cord in their OBEs, and some people look for it and don't see it at all. It's like, I can't see it at all. Yeah. And for me, it was a constant annoyance. Early on, I mean, a lot of the first book talks about my experiences early on, back in the early 80s and that. And I would try to make progress and walk to a certain place or whatever, and I would feel this constant tugging at my back. And I'd look behind and I'd see, you know, my silver cord or whatever. And to me, it looked like kind of like a grayish colored garden hose a lot of times. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the times that you were talking about, I wrote about it in the first book, I just, you know, I'd done this so many times, and I had been, you know, felt encumbered by this silver cord for so long, for so many experiences, I just got pissed off. And it's like, you know, I just went off, and it's like, I turned around and I decided to play tug of war with the thing. So I grabbed it with both hands. I was practicing Tai Chi at the time. I did Tai Chi for like 7 years. And so I got in a Tai Chi, you know, stance and started tugging on the thing. It's like, I don't care if I die, I'm going to, you know, have my way with this thing. And I yanked on the thing as hard as I could. And really nothing happened. I mean, I'm still alive, obviously. I didn't break any cord or anything like that. And, you know, the fact that some people see the cord and some people don't tells me that maybe it's a psychological thing. I mean, maybe I was somehow subconsciously holding myself back. And maybe that's why people need to see that, is it's some kind of reassurance that they still have a connection to their physical body. And I tend to think it's more of a psychological device than a real thing. Despite the fact that it was, you know, causing me such grief back then, I still think that it's probably not anything more than, you know, something in our psyche, something in our subconscious. But it sure was interesting. And I don't have those problems anymore. My silver cord doesn't tend to cause me any grief anymore for some reason.
Well, and see what I was describing, that tri-state where I was the body, I could see the body on the bed, and the ball of light, I was the ball, and I knew that was me. That was the I am. And then the third state, which to me seemed to be the oversoul. And I thought, there's no, in that particular state, there was no silver cord, but there was awareness that I was able to see and I didn't need eyes. And the other thing too, when I did have the silver cord experience, to me, it you're like, yeah, that garden hose would be a good way to put it. And it was forever, because I'm way out in this with the stars and I'm seeing this little cord go back far into almost, you know, you would say infinity, wherever the body was at that point. And at the same time, I'm like, oh, that's it. Yeah, fine. And I had no interest in it whatsoever. I was just kind of surprised that it registered that I saw it. I thought, oh, wow, that's what they're talking about. And then I was off to do whatever it was. Like, okay, fine, no biggie. The one thing I did want to ask you, you have gone to the Monroe Institute and done a session with them. What was that like?
Well, actually, I was at the Monroe Institute. I was there to visit one time, and it wasn't a good time, so I ended up having to come back. This is a long time ago. And then, I don't know, probably, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, I went back to the Institute. See, Robert Monroe kind of went off on out-of-body experiences in the first book, as I said, and then he went into his focus level stuff in the second book. And then he created this gateway experience, which most, you know, the Monroe Institute is mostly known for their gateway experience and all of the different programs that have sprouted from that. But that, they'll tell you right straight out that they don't expect out-of-body experiences out of that. They expect these focus level experiences. And I really haven't attended Gateway, so I can't tell you the difference. But what I do know is that the Monroe Institute, several years ago, they started running a program that's hosted by author William Buhlman, who's the author of Adventures Beyond the Body, which is a fantastic book on OBEs. And William Buhlman runs you through a course, and it's not designed for these focus level experiences. It's not a gateway program. It's designed specifically to try and induce out-of-body experience. And that makes it kind of unique from all the Monroe Institute programs that they have, you know, aside from that one. And I did attend Buhlman's OBE class several years ago, and it was very good. I highly recommend it.
Well, and see, I interviewed him right before they got started with that. And basically, that was a way for them to expand their programs and give people another type of experience that really is mind expanding, a consciousness enhancer, I think. And that was, I thought, a really good addition to their program, because I've done the HemiSync practice with some of that. I have not been there. I had an invitation to go. I was like, no, I'm too busy. I should have said yes, but the first time I actually did one of the experiences with, like, it's very introductory, and you're getting into the state, you're learning how to just really go deep into that hypnotic state and relaxed. And I remember when it was time to wake up, I had the sense that somebody came into the room, and there was somebody standing beside me, just maybe 15 feet away at the door frame of the room. And he's right there. I'm thinking, what the heck? And I heard him say, okay, it's time to wake up. I thought, oh my gosh. To me, that was like an imprint of Robert Monroe stuck in that program, where he had imprinted, in my, you know, my way of describing it. It's like, cause I jumped. I'm like, whoa. Whoa, he's right here. So I thought that was such a mind, you know, shift to have the experience of going into the hypnotic state. And then when his voice came in, and I was aware that he had entered the room, and then he woke me up, and I was, yeah, but that was a wake up call. So these kinds of experiences, whatever they are challenging to get us to think in different ways about how we access our states of conscious awareness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that having a place like the Monroe Institute gives us kind of a focus for that work. I mean, right now, you know, if you're at home or at work or wherever you are, you know, people get too focused on their daily lives, and they don't take the time to stop and explore altered states of consciousness. They don't meditate, you know, because you got, you know, cars to take into the shop and kids to feed and groceries to buy and all of this day-to-day stuff, and you don't stop to think about it. And it's real easy to get carried away. And places like the Monroe Institute give us a context where you can just set all of that real world stuff aside and say, okay, we're going to focus on this and just, you know, try and go into the deeper states. And you really need to kind of let go of all of that stuff so you can focus totally in order to have an OBE. And I think it kind of helps to have that context and be around other people who are also striving to get that experience and all of that. So yeah, I do think there's a lot of value in that.
You talked about the psychic experiences being more prominent, or at least, you know, more than you had experienced before. Do you think that was part of this expanding your awareness?
Well, yeah, I think some people obviously are born more psychic than others. I never thought I was. I had a couple of, you know, psychic experiences, whatever, as a kid, but nothing really, you know, that too exciting. I think everybody has got little synchronicities and things like that that they can't explain. Mm-hmm. But when I started having OBEs, I started doing these, you know, OBE type meditations where I would, you know, blank my mind and I would try and, you know, zero out everything and try to lose awareness of my body and all these steps I'd go through. And I think that dabbling with those altered states of consciousness kind of opened up something in me, and I started having some, you know, psychic experiences. I started, you know, taking the words out of people's mouths and things like that, or knowing what's going to play on the radio next and strange things like that. And it's like, well, you know, I can't really explain it. And none of the books up to that point had ever talked about any kind of connection between psychic experiences and out-of-body experiences, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so to me, it was kind of a revelation of, okay, this like I'm unlocking something and this is weird. And what I found is that if I didn't work on the out-of-body stuff, it, you know, sometimes it would come back to haunt me, but other times if I didn't focus on it, it would just kind of fade away. And with it, the psychic experiences would fade away too. So it's like when I have OBEs and really start working on that stuff, they come back. So I've kind of noticed a direct correlation between dabbling with the altered states and the psychic experiences, at least for someone who's not a natural born psychic.
Well, and I think that's one of those little anomalies that when you go into this without expectation, just to see, I am having an out of body experience, and then fill in the blanks. Just, it's wide open. Anything is possible. The only thing you say to program yourself is, I have out-of-body experiences. I am an out-of-body experiencer. I'm projecting, I'm programming, I'm putting myself in that state where this is my reality. And then everything else that goes along with it, that programming, is learning. And yeah, it's, you know, reaffirming, okay, what is this for me? Because that's where this is so fantastic. It's different for everybody. I love that.
Yeah, and it's all, what were you talking about pretty much is subconscious programming. Because most people are so focused on that little tiny, what Sigmund Freud called the ego, that tiny little person that looks through your eyes and focuses on cooking or whatever, cooking dinner, that person is only a fragment of who you really are, everyone. What I've found through my out-of-body experiences is there are many different layers. And like you said, I mean, you talked about where you had a experience of being split into three parts. My very first OBE, I was split into five parts, and it was very, very strange indeed, because I knew at the time that I was all five of these people. I was aware and conscious of being all five at the same time, and we were all talking to one another, and it was just very, very strange. But people throughout history have described experiences, but it's not just that deal, but there's the subconscious too. Most people don't realize how important and influential and how smart the subconscious is, but it really helps to program your subconscious and set the intent, like you said, of I want to have an out-of-body experience, whatever, because your subconscious can make these things happen, or at least facilitate it quite a bit. It mm-hmm. goes quite a ways. So yeah, programming the subconscious is a big part of it, and some people, I mean, they talk about their books. Some people, their whole technique is just setting intention. And yeah, intention is a big part of it. And that's kind of, you know, programming the subconscious or whatever. But, you know, that's only a part of the equation.
Well, a part of that, and then we'll go beyond that. I want to go back just really quickly to pick up what you're talking about, the programming. You also get into in one of the blog posts about the music and how influential it can be without us even knowing it. Being my background in radio and knowing that even though that song is playing in the background, on some level, I am imprinting that song. So if it is a negative song, you know, somebody wrote it when they were depressed, they're getting over a relationship, they're mad at somebody else, and you're listening to their lyrics and singing along. Not only that, I mean, I remember singing along to Lola, and one of the guys goes, "You're singing along to that?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah." And I'm like, "Oh, well, yeah." You know, oh, well, I like the song, but I, you know, as a kid, I was programmed with all these music, you know, the House of the Rising Sun, I'm singing along, and I'm not even knowing that as I'm singing, I'm programming. And so it's so subtle, but it's very influential. And when you get into doing these kinds of programming intentions with the out of body work, then you realize, oh my gosh, you know, I need to disconnect and disengage from some of this other stuff like commercials and just the daily newscasts, all of that, to be able to reclaim my mind. And I really wanted to bring that up because you also, there's a blog post back in 2017 that you talk about this, the Nirvana, one of the songs, you say that, oh man, you know, you listen to those words and it's not a happy world.
Yeah, that's very true. People don't realize how they are programming their own subconscious. And in some cases you can, you know, severely sabotage your own life by doing that. And I think one of the ways is by listening to negative music. And I think the whole Seattle sound thing was probably pretty bad, pretty negative stuff, because I mean, yeah, there's this whole message of negativity, and I mean, there's a positive side to that, because you know, it's kind of like admitting that there's a problem is the first step for recovery. So it's like, yeah, you've got to confront that there's pain here or whatever, or anger. I mean, I like to listen to heavy metal music because I was a child of the 80s, right? And it was either heavy metal or disco. But I mean, you have to be very conscious of what you're feeding into your subconscious. And yeah, the lyrics can definitely program you in a negative way. One of the things I talked about in my first book is this phenomenon that I encountered called my inner voice. And it's basically kind of an inner source of wisdom. And other books talk about it, so it's not something unique to me or anything. But I found that this started happening more and more also as I engaged in altered states of consciousness. But one of the things is that because of the inner voice thing, I've kind of programmed myself to pay attention to what my subconscious is saying and doing. And what I'll find is I find myself getting messages from my subconscious from, you know, like I'll hear song lyrics from a song I listened to 2 days ago. And it's like I haven't listened to any music since then. This song came back from after 2 days, and it just kind of is a poignant reminder of, oh yeah, this is really affecting me, and it's affecting me in ways I can't even fathom because it's all subconscious. So yeah, you got to watch what you feed your subconscious, and it's good to feed it positive messages, and it's good to you know, reaffirming and you know, avoiding the blame game and all of this. And it's like, yeah, there are problems out there, we've all got a lot of problems, but we need to move beyond those and learn from them.
Well, I thought it was interesting when you're saying you were a heavy metal fan and you're going back on that blog and saying, listen to these songs. And there's Ozzy Osbourne and there's Manowar and Slaughter. I'm like, whoa, I never would have tagged those with having, you know, that positive ramification, you know, for looking beyond and above and a higher consciousness states. Like, it's everywhere. It depends on who, you know, who you're following. You can find these wonderful positive messages if you just look.
Yeah. And I mean, I regularly, several years ago, I went through and kind of like cleaned out my phone of all of the negative music I could. And, it's kind of tough because I was really attached to some of that music, but I think that it's made me a lot more positive and upbeat person because of it. But yeah, it really does help. I mean, people like you said, all of these, you know, even the most negative musicians that are out there, you know, talking about things, have a positive side a lot of times. You know, like a group like, I mean, Ozzy Osbourne has a song about out of body experience, right? It's called "Over the Mountains," and it's a pretty cool song. But, you know, if you can take what you're currently feeding your subconscious, the music you listen to, and kind of reprogram it for out-of-body or whatever you want in life, it's like doing affirmations, right? Affirmations work. They actually help you reprogram your life, not just, you know, so you stop self-sabotaging and stop, you know, blocking yourself and stop denying yourself. I mean, these are important things to learn in life.
Part of this that's so helpful, I think, that even if you've been practicing out-of-body experiences and you're able to do it, there are other techniques that might be able to enhance it or give you a different direction or you know, jumpstart in some way, shape, or form your life because you're just looking at it from a different vantage point, a different perspective. And that's what you offer in the books and online when you're talking about, okay, here are some different techniques and like just open it up basically to exercise 22 buzzing and relax completely and then start, you know, hearing a buzzing sound in your head and it's just a little too quiet to hear, but getting louder and then listen to the buzzing and start to hear it and then hold that for several minutes and see if you can feel the vibrations and connect on a higher level with that. Now I'm putting words in that, but to me, this is just an example, one example, and you give several for people to kind of get into that state where they're not, the thoughts are gone. The thoughts are gone. So they're, you're not being distracted by that. People do breathing, but this one with the buzzing, I thought was, okay, that's another way to quiet that monkey mind.
Yeah, part of the problem with OBEs is you have to get out of your own way, right? A lot of people are so focused on their body that you have to learn to get out of your way. And a lot of, like I said, different people need different ways to do that because we all have our own little, you know, we have different brains, basically. And so, yeah, I mean, things like the buzzing or whatever. I offer several techniques in that first book on, you know, of things to try. And then I give my favorite technique in chapter 24, the one that I use most often and I've been most successful at. But you also have to remember, Wendy, I released that the first book was published 20 years ago.
Yeah.
and so I've learned a lot since then. And I've been thinking about writing another book and I've actually kind of started working on it.
Yay!
But the problem is, problem is, I mean, there's so much information out there and so many good new techniques that people are, you know, coming forward and saying, oh, we got to try this one and you got to do this one. And, you know, this kind of helps you let go or whatever. I mean, there's just so much information out there that's like the information is pouring in faster than I could write a book about it. So, I'm hoping that there's going to be a revolutionary breakthrough where someone is going to say, okay, this is, you know, this is what's going on, and this is, you know, you press this button here, and this is, you know, gonna, but, you know, that's kind of a pipe dream, but.
Bob, you are the button, okay? You are the button, so write your book.
Well, I'll get right on that.
Well, you have a wealth of information, and doing all the book reviews, you can go through the top 10 or 15 and say, here, streamline your focus and start with these. And then because with that information, you have the library to go through and see what's relevant, and someone will find it useful because you've narrowed the flotsam and jetsam, the overwhelm of all this stuff. That's where it gets difficult when you see, oh my God, there are hundreds of books. Where do I start? Go with 15.
Yeah, and on my blog, I actually published an article, I think it was it 2016, I think, called Bob's Best of Breed OBE Books. And basically it takes and categorizes each one's of, okay, if you want to hear OBE stories and read the stories themselves of this is what it's like, these are my top, you know, 7 picks. Or if you want, you know, the best techniques for inducing an OBE, these are my top, you know, 10 picks or whatever. So I break it down into different categories, you know, and it's like, okay, if you're into Wicca, you should check out these books. If you're into this, check out these books. And, you know, so anyway, I kind of tried to categorize them and it's all good information. It, you know, another category is scientific. Okay. If you're a scientist and you want to know, well, or even if you're scientifically inclined, not even a scientist, but it's like, well, I want to know scientifically what's going on in the brain, you know, what are people written about it psychologically or physically or whatever. You know, these are the books. So yeah, that's out there on my blog and hope people look at it.
Thank you. Thank you. We got to get out of here. I really appreciate what you're doing. OBE Outlook Blogspot, that's the name of the blog. And then if you're looking for the website, you can check that out too. It's just Robert, and isn't it Robert?
RobertPeterson.org?
Yep. .org. Okay. like, was it .org or .com? And one way or the other, these are all bits of somebody's experience and they work. All right, so give it a shot. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Till next time, stay curious and travel light. See ya.